Good morning, 9/11. Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm David Gustina. Joe Donahue taking some time off, feeling excited because I'm sitting here with the men, the boys in the panel. And today it's our Alan Shartok, an associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good morning, David. Good morning, Alan.
I'm a little out of it.
No.
Yeah, I went to get a yo-yo last night at the Tanglewood, sold the place out.
Fantastic. It was quite something,
late
as
night,
you described
huh?
It was. Got into bed at 12. Murray the dog decided to raise hell quarter to four.
Yeah, four hours sleep, that's not much.
If I had 4 hours that's not the way it works.
Well, look, you got an hour right now. Take a nap.
Okay, that's a good idea. You and Mike have fun.
Okay, that was a joke. Let's deal with serious subject, though. Obviously, Egypt is on top of mind today, and in all the newscasts, I'll read to you now a little bit and just give people an update. The Islamist Muslim Brotherhood is trying to regroup today after the deadly government assaults on its encampments and the arrest of many of its leaders by calling for a, quote, day of rage. That is, Egyptian authorities bracing for more violence, and the government has authorized the use of deadly force. The assaults left more than 600 people dead. Reading from the Washington Post, now Egypt's military-backed government authorized security forces Thursday to fire live ammunition against opponents, underlining its determination to crush any lingering challenge posed by supporters of the country's ousted president following a bloody crackdown on their camps. There was further intentional fallout Thursday from the crackdown on the Brotherhood camps on the outskirts of Cairo when President Obama announced the cancellation of joint military exercises next month with Egypt. Obviously, there's a lot going on here, and the U.S. role is part of our discussion this morning. Alan, your thoughts as the news continues to break in Egypt?
Well, of course, I would defer to Michael, who is not only brighter and handsomer than I am.
It's a good thing this is radio.
but I would just point out, as I did earlier today, that there is a phenomenal cartoon by Bromhall in the Daily News. It's, I mean, 1,000 people are dead, apparently.
Is that what it's up to?
Yeah, it's up to 1,000 now. At least that's what I heard this morning. And there's a phenomenal cartoon. It shows Obama sitting on the beach with Kerry, and Obama is saying to Kerry, "Who are we for? The military tyrants or the theocratic thugs?" And that's between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah, no, the president did take time out of his vacation to make to hold a press conference and make a statement in Martha's Vineyard yesterday. People were urging him to speak out against the violence, and he has. And he announced that the U.S. is canceling military exercises that were supposed to be next month with the Egyptian military. But his term, intervention, to describe what the military is doing, where they're using, deadly force against the protesters, he did condemn that. But if he called it what it was, a coup, the U.S. would have to stop its cut off the $1.3 billion in aid to the military. And, it seems like that cartoon sums it all up. I mean, who is your enemy here? And what's the, if Morsi were to stay in power, that religious fundamentalists were kind of taking over, and even members of the Muslim Brotherhood were complaining about him being too extreme and not being inclusive in his government. But if the military takes over, then what do you have? You have you've thrown out democracy. Obama said yesterday you should solve these problems with ballots, not bullets. But, when you cancel elections and you go in to basically take over the government, I think they call that a coup d'etat. Well, you're the political scientist. What is it when the military
No. There's no question of what it is. Yeah. But as we've been talking about here, the idea that we have what Eisenhower would have called a military-industrial complex, which clearly is a big part of the economy of this country. And when we talk about $1.5 billion going to the Egyptian military, what do you think we're talking about?
We're spending it in the U.S., right?
We're paying it. Right. Paying it down, as we say, and at the same time, it supports a good deal of our economy one way or another, so we don't want to give it up. Not only that, but as the cartoon suggests that we're talking about, the Muslim Brotherhood weren't exactly playing it square either. All the reports that we're hearing is that they were, trying to suppress other honest democratic ideas. And it's very interesting that you read in the papers this morning that the Christian churches, and it's Christians are 10% of the population are being firebombed. Mm. By who? And why? This is not an easy black and white situation.
No, I mean, it could become an Iran if the religious fundamentalists take over. It could become Turkey, maybe, if the military takes over and allows elections, which might not be as bad as, a Syria, where you'll have a chaos and a civil war going on. I mean, you really have a tinderbox over there. And, what do you think they should do? I mean, who do they support? A lot of people are complaining that they should speak out more firmly against this deadly force. You said 1,000 people in the
latest
report. And then a couple of thousand injured. And with the day of rage that they're promoting for today going
on.
Mean more. This is really a mess.
Isn't it also, in a way, history repeating itself? I mean, the U.S. and in international relations, the choice has always been, in many cases, the lesser of two evils. Who do we support? Do we support the regime? Do we support the dictator? Do we support democracy?
Yeah, that really sums it up. And while technically or officially we always will support democracy, we've supported military-backed quote-unquote democratically elected leaders, in foreign countries when it's been convenient. And we've opposed them when they might actually be democratically elected. And, it's all the politics of the moment, I guess.
You know, Mike, you said something that really struck me about the military. We know that that the military has been running Egypt for years and years, and that there is a military infrastructure, an economic infrastructure. We know that that exists in China, and we know that it exists in Turkey, which you just mentioned, and that's where there's always been a secular military, which is sort of interesting in that there's some parallelism here with what's going on in Egypt. But the Turkish military, which have not hesitated to step in when things were floating away from secularism, became, you got Ataturk, the founder of modern Turkey, and the rest, and now you have a guy who basically is a religious figure in terms of his politics, running things. Erdogan, who I don't know is the most popular guy in the world either, because in the end, people are going to sit down and look and see whether they have food, whether they have jobs. And that, I have a feeling, is a big part of the way in which democracy would work. I heard one thing that was fascinating to me, and that is that the Muslim Brotherhood folks were saying yesterday, we have to return the presidency to us because we won, but it doesn't have to be Morsi who is the president.
Right, but I mean, it's going to be more difficult to find somebody that's acceptable to the military, to the Muslim Brotherhood, and to the more secular segment of the population that did, want to participate in a democracy too.
Mike, don't you suspect that a lot of people have learned a lot since the Morsi victory? One of the reasons Morsi was able to win is that everybody else was splintered. I think
it's kind of a runoff situation.
Yeah, I think everybody knows.
It wasn't like the popular winner.
Yeah, that was a mistake. I don't think that's going to happen quite the same way the next time you have an election. And don't you think that the military will say anybody but these guys? So in other words, they might be willing to compromise on who the candidate is going to be also. They just don't want to be thrown out on their ears. So if you had another election, which I think you'll do, I don't think you're going to find a very different result.
Yeah, and you can't have an election until things settle down. How long does it take for these things to cool down? I mean, it's not close to cooling down.
Well, religion is a very strong motivator. If you, as Bob Dylan wrote, maybe not.
God, one of those maybe, great writers.
God is on our side, and believes it. They believe it. So, in that case, are you willing to carry a bomb on your back or internally in your body to walk onto an airplane or to kill? That's a tough one.
All leading to an incredibly complex situation. We're going to take a short break. That was our Alan Shar talk. We're here with Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain. And when we come back, the president is coming. The president is coming.
No.
The president is coming.
But who's coming with him?
Support for WAMC comes from First Care Walk-In Medical Center, Route 299, Highland, New York. Open 7 days for the urgent treatment of children and adults, x-ray, wound repair, and medication on site, firstcaremedcenter.com. Capital Wine at State & Lark in the heart of Albany. Offering local and international wines, tastings Fridays 6 to 9, capitalwinestore.com. And the Dutchess County Arts Council and the Hudson Valley Folk Guild, presenting Beyond a Simple Folk Song, August 17th, 8 p.m. at the First United Methodist Church in Highland, hudsonvalleyfolkguild.org.
Looking at charts and graphs and getting our ducks in a row here, it's the Roundtable. I'm David Gustina here with Alan Schar talking Mike Spain, associate editor of the Times Union. And as I teased before the break, the president is coming, the president is coming, and that's President Obama, obviously, coming to upstate New York next year. Next week, he's also going to make a stop in Pennsylvania, but it looks like at least Buffalo, Syracuse, I believe Binghamton, New York. But there's some speculation over, like, what is he going to talk about? Will the governor be with him?
Well, one thing I think that it's important to recognize is that, you know, these areas, Buffalo and Syracuse and Binghamton, they haven't been part of the resurgence that New York right. City, the Hudson Valley, and certainly the Capital Region have seen in recent years. I think they're still haven't fully climbed out of the economic crises of the 90s.
But the governor has been spending a considerable amount of capital.
That's right. He has been trying his upstate initiative, you know, using casinos, using economic development efforts.
In the beginning, using fracking.
Right. Fracking would have been. And, you know, Western New York has an entirely different attitude about fracking. They look to Pennsylvania just to their south, and they look at their own struggles economically, and it's a different, you know, different point of view out there.
And which is
not
also
for everyone.
It's also
actually,
interesting. No, not for everybody, but I'd say that it's certainly not the virtually everybody in the Hudson Valley seems to be against it, you know, because it's the watershed that feeds New York City.
The president is not.
Yeah, but that watershed is exempt, which is so interesting.
Well, Dave, you make a good point. He's basically going to go through the area that where fracking would, many believe, would help the economy, and he's open to it as long as they can provide technology to protect the natural resources. So
a
maybe,
big if.
Yeah, and the governor may want to go along with him to support his own upstate initiative, but he may want to keep his distance if it's going to be you may be onto something. Maybe this is the pro-fracking tour.
Well, but what's going to stop a reporter if the governor and the president are together to ask him a question about their differences and what's going on?
Well, I have no doubt that they will ask the president, about his views on fracking, and he'll make that clear. You know, I like this president. I'm not sure I like his position on fracking, and so I do what a lot of people do when I hear something I don't like. I ignore it.
Cover the eyes and ears. Right. Well, and you mentioned that this week in your Gazette commentary. I think you're 100% right on that a lot of people, and, you know, I'm not excluded from any of this stuff, which is, you know, when somebody doesn't agree with us and we overwhelmingly support them, we tend to overlook the things we don't agree with. But I think you would agree, Alan, provides a very interesting week next week when it comes to the governor of New York and the president of the United States.
Well, remember, the governor has a 63% approval rating, which is very high.
Yes.
The president doesn't have anything like that.
No, he's
and
polls mean anything, you know, from time to time.
I think they mean something. I mean, you know, I'm a big believer in polls. I know that this is not a popular thing to say. But I think it gives us a snapshot as we go along.
Yeah.
And it's a way in which, in a democratic society, people talk back. And you say, okay, they like it, they don't like it.
You can't ignore them if you're a politician, but you can't make every decision based on the polls of the day, or you have no backbone and you'll end up in trouble.
No, that's true. But I've fought this out with your boss, Rex, on a number of occasions.
I believe this week, in fact.
In fact, I did.
This is now a promotion for the media
this
project.
This Sunday at 6 Sunday or at Monday 6. At 3. Anytime. Yeah. WIMC.org.
Right. Right. Newspaper men meet
such interesting people. Corruption,
but,
crime.
You know, we have an interesting story today by Eric Anderson, our business editor, talking about some stores coming to Cross Gates. One was announced this week, Lord & Taylor. Now it looks like Crate & Barrel will be coming at Christmas time.
Crate & Barrel.
And Michael Kors is opening one of his fashionable accessories stores there. But
Isn't that beer?
No. Begin with a K.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Women who like high fashion will certainly recognize that name. But there was a graphic which was, the Capital District Regional Planning Commission was the source of this, and it ran with the story. In the year 2000, the Capital Region's median income was $58,300-something. It was about the same as across New York State and a little bit above the U.S., which was about $57,000 a year per household. In 2011, the Capital Region's average household income is close to $60,000. It's $59,400. Mm-hmm. Across New York, it's gone down a couple of thousand. It's now $57,000. So we're going up while the average New Yorker is going down, and the average U.S. household income is down to $53,000. And, you know, this is the result of all kinds of investments in this region. You know, you can talk about Joe Bruno and the fact that he's going to go on trial, it appears, again in federal court. But, you know, he was involved with Governor Pataki and even prior to Pataki, the first Cuomo administration to bring high tech into this region, partnering with IBM, getting shovel-ready places for technology. You know, we're lucky.
Mike, they said that there would be higher-paying jobs coming as a result of this investment.
Well, let's look at Mike's eye there. Wait a second. What do I see in his eye?
I
see a dollar sign.
Yeah, this is this is not what the president is going to see when he comes through Western New York. He's going to see a very different situation. So, while we're fortunate, we've had him here four times, right in the immediate capital region, and then beyond.
Why do you think he likes us so much? What do you think?
He
gets a decent reception around here.
He certainly does.
The middle class does well here.
Yeah, well, it says New York State's median income is, or household income is higher than it is across the U.S. So, you know, it's a place that's successful and he's popular. So, you know, maybe he comes here because he gets good footage, good exposure, you know. It'd be interesting.
Mm.
Well, gentlemen, we're going to have more to talk about, but not before we take a bit of a news break. I'm here with Alan Shartok, Associate Editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain. I'm David Gustina, and we'll be back after these words and an update of the news of the day from NPR. 9:36, back for the roundtable. I'm David Gustina, here with Alan Shartok and Associate Editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain. And guys, we're going to the fair, the New York State Fair.
Yeah, up in Syracuse, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
And
will the President of the United States attend the state fair?
Well, that's another question.
I would hope so.
Well, you think he'll be the biggest draw? Probably now that Bon Jovi has pulled out.
Well, can somebody tell me something about Bon Jovi? Is he really that hot?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's having a good resurgence from that sort of 80s rock era.
Yeah, and certainly John Bon Jovi's had his own career. He's acted. He's done all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. He rises sort of above his bandmates in popularity. But the group, as we see now in the Hollywood Reporter of all places, guys, Bon Jovi cancels New York State Fair appearance, will play Governor Cuomo fundraiser instead. And basically, the band pulled out of its August 28th show at the fair, which was expected to generate $1.1 million in revenue. And, of course, they couldn't resist themselves. In the Hollywood Reporter, they say Bon Jovi fans who were living on a prayer that the band would perform at the New York State Fair this month were in for a dose of bad medicine when the two songs of the group, guys. The show was canceled, allegedly due to the upcoming performance at the political fundraiser of Governor Andrew Cuomo. Now, there's some back and forth to why did they actually pull the schedule.
Both were on their schedule, and they had a conflict with the one at the State Fair. It makes it sound like they chose one over the other. It just happened that this is according to a spokesman for the governor, it just happened that the state fair show was pulled because they had some scheduling issues. They didn't have a scheduling issue with
the
Cuomo
job.
Fundraiser.
On the 25th.
Or they didn't have it when they put it on the schedule, right?
But, I mean, who's to know what's behind it? It's probably
Could we guess?
The Would you?
Each of us could
maybe
take
you could
a
speculate
guess.
For us, please.
Okay, let me take a guess here. It's wild, and it's probably not so. But maybe somebody made a call over there and said, "You guys don't want to do this anymore." And
you mean okay. from the governor's office?
Yeah,
to Bon Jovi.
Maybe. But
what? What? Why wouldn't the governor and the governor's office want to see the New York State Fair succeed? You know, it's been sagging in attendance in recent years.
Perfect.
And, you know, they were hoping, a few years ago, Aerosmith was there,
that's
evidently.
Right.
And that did
Sinclair
boost
Lewis,
attendance.
You know.
Aerosmith was also from back then, yeah.
But it also?
currently, when you say Aerosmith to people in our generation, it refers to a very successful rock band that did help elevate attendance at the fair and was regarded as helping it make a big success. And now Bon Jovi was expected to do that, and they have to find somebody else. And
yeah, not a bad take. $650,000 for the group to come, and $1.1 million projected in revenue. It would be good for the
well,
fair.
Well, but there's a background here, obviously. Mm-hmm. And the background is what's going on with many of the so-called ethics or investigatory efforts
on the part
of the governor. Well, this is directly tied
to
in.
It, yeah.
I mean, I think the reason that it became an embarrassment was the governor, the last time I looked, and I'm sure it's much more than that now, had $29 million in his account. He appoints a Moreland Act Commission to, quote, follow the money and wherever it leads. And when you got $29 million, then the question is, look, call me a cynic, call me Ishmael, call me anything you want, but I truly believe somebody cuts you a check of a massive size, they want something from you. Either they want access or they want influence or they have a particular thing in mind, like a building in New York where they want some kind of a sweetheart deal. So now here's this Moreland Act Commission filled with DAs, including some Republicans, who swear that they're going to look at it no matter where the money goes. And so this whole concept of conflict of interest is much on everybody's mind. Okay, so you have a group called J. Cope, the Joint Commission on something.
Public Ethics.
Sometimes called J. Joke. And they have done very little. And now the good government groups, otherwise known as the Goo-Goos, are investigating them.
That's funny.
That's
the story today.
That's right. That government reform groups, the Bar Association, have teamed up to conduct a survey on how to improve the Troubled States Ethics Commission.
Right.
Well, they seem to be having some leadership issues and some membership issues.
And some people, and remember that Cuomo got the best deal he could, he says, with them, and they got to appoint members of the commission, one of whom just quit.
Right.
Pat Belgaro. Mm-hmm. And so, who is a distinguished fellow, by the way, and one of the real top budget experts in the state and the country. And he quits. He was Shelley Silver's appointee. So we don't know.
And the why is sort of fuzzy there, isn't it?
No, we don't have the slightest idea why. We can make stuff up,
but
we don't really know. Okay. So anyway, now I'm sure that the governor's people are being very careful about appearances of conflict of interest. I would be, too, if I was in his spot. And so now you say the Department of Agriculture is going to pay Bon Jovi to come and sing at the Syracuse Fair. And two nights later or three nights later, whatever it is, he's going to sing for at $1,000 a plate. Dinner for the governor.
For 100 people.
100 people.
And I think it was in reverse order.
Yeah, no, three days before.
I'm so sorry. Because it's basically the issue is what the appearance of conflict of interest is here. Apparently somebody blinked, and that's the end of that. And now you got Syracuse, which is interesting.
Sure.
Because it figures in big time. You got Stephanie Miner, the mayor, feuding with the governor over whether cities are getting their fair share. You got the Syracuse Fair, and now the rug is being pulled out. And if you're somebody who wanted to go see Bon Jovi, you're not a happy camper right now.
And one of the things, and you've talked about this, Alan, you've called a lot of the sort of things that go on, like the campaign financing and the gathering of money, legal bribery, and that a lot of these things should be changed because of that. And
I didn't call it legal bribery. Plunkett of Tammany Hall called it legal bribery. He said, listen, this goes back a long way. There's illegal graft, he said, and then there's legal graft. You know, if you say it into a microphone, I'll do this if you do that, you're going to jail.
Quid pro quo.
Yeah,
but the point being that governors and Governor Cuomo's in the same spot, always seem to say, well, until those rules are changed, I'm going to play by the game the way it is.
Really? Yeah. Well, they don't even say that. They don't have to say it. They just do it.
Well, if they don't do it and somebody else sure. does it, they're going to lose. And then the rules will be changed and no one, you know, and they'll be caught. That's the rationale for everybody. If you're going to, I don't like these rules, but if you're going to come against me with these rules, I have no choice sure. but to do the same thing, you know.
Right.
That's the rationale.
So there, it would appear that there's this whole thing all together sort of wrapped up. It starts with, you know, just one little thing, which is Bon Jovi. And then we get into this serious stuff of campaign yeah. financing and who is giving massive amounts of money. And, I mean, after all, don't you think $1,000 is a lot of money for a piece of rubber chicken?
Well, this is how much each of the 100 people attending the Cuomo fundraiser on August
25th.
Yeah, the minimal amount that they would have to
yeah.
pay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My bet is they kick in a little bit more than 1,000.
Well, they get to see Bon Jovi, so, you know, that's pretty good. It won't be the same as at the Syracuse Fair, but, you know.
Do you think those guys are coming there to pay $1,000 because they get to see Bon Jovi? Or because they want something?
Okay, I agree. I think that it's probably more than just seeing a band, because they could do it a lot cheaper. They could go see Bon Jovi for a couple $100, right?
Or they could buy a record.
Well, you know, there's something to a live performance, but we're digressing.
I have a feeling we haven't heard the last of the fair officials on this.
Yeah, this is, I'm still puzzled. Why, you know, they're gonna play at a fundraiser where, you know, it's going to be more convenient. It'll be in New York City, I presume, you know, and everybody can get there easy. Rather than, you know, flying to upstate New York. But, you know, why would they not play the state fair how could it really be connected to the Cuomo thing? I don't know. It's just puzzling.
Sounds like somebody panicked.
Yeah, a little overreaction, really.
Yeah, I think that's right. I don't think they knew it was going to blow up. It was a slow news cycle. You make something out of it.
Well, and into all this, we'll add one more issue, which is, well, is a fixed public financing of campaigns. I'll never forget when Jonathan Soros came through and you interviewed him for the Capital Connection, Alan, and he was convinced that they were going to get public financing of campaigns, and you looked at him and said, are you kidding me? Why would they do that?
This is New York.
Well, yeah. I mean, let's face it. Put yourself in the place of the New York State Legislature. They make out like bandits. The governor makes out like a bandit as a result. And you're going to change the rules? Why? If you had initiative and referendum in this state and we could vote on it, it would be done in a second and a half. And so, by the way, would be term limits for the state legislature.
Right, but you would need a constitutional convention and constitutional
amendments.
Amendments coming through them. Yeah. Well, right. And,
yeah.
I mean,
and they're not going to do it.
You need a whole big look at the state constitution, but you're right. I mean, they can't. It's very difficult to get a constitutional amendment through.
Yeah, so how are we going to get rid of paper then?
Well, I was just going to say.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Isn't that wild?
New York State's legislature prints all of its bills on paper, required to do so by the state constitution. At least that's the interpretation.
Well, it says does. It says it shall be printed 3 days before.
Right. I mean, all you would need is a judge to say in the modern digital age, printed is a relative term.
Or change it to posted.
Well, I mean, it would take a change in the constitution. Yeah. But I mean, I think a interpretation could be printed means something very different. We in the newspaper industry know that. We're publishing a print edition of the newspaper, but our stories are seen by thousands and thousands of more people than those who pick up the newspaper, you know, the one that you can rattle
sure.
like that. But and that's the world everywhere. You know, the term printed is a relative term. So I think all it takes is an enlightened court to make a ruling, and it could save millions of dollars a year in printing costs and make it a lot easier for the legislators. And those pictures we run every year during the closing session where they have piles and piles and piles of these bills
stacks
on their desks would no longer be necessary. All they'd have is little tablets or laptops or iPads or
sure.
smartphones.
Well, then they wouldn't have to read it from their iPad, as opposed to not reading it from the paper.
Right. They could not call up the story on their digital.
They could also not read it on their iPad.
Right. They would have it. Be much easier not to read it, I guess.
Yeah. Well, when you were talking to Ulster County Executive Mike Hine, he said, you know, I don't know how anybody in the state legislature could call themselves an environmentalist if they keep killing small forests with all these.
Well, it's recycled, the paper is, so there.
Well, okay, fine then.
Well, I'll tell you, though, I've spent a lot of time up there starting as a fairly young man. I can tell you that smell of paper is overwhelming. You know, we should talk about smells on this program sometime. My favorite
Smell-o-vision,
place,
yes.
My favorite place in the whole world is the Library of Congress, which I think waxes the floors every day. And the smell is terrific. I don't know if it's honey they use in their beeswax or what, but it's something. So what's your favorite place to go because of the smell other than a food?
Hershey, Pennsylvania.
That's just drive through town. But maybe the governor will go through there, or the president will go through there on his way to Scranton, and we're connecting all these stories. But, you know, it will be interesting to see if they can come up with a way to stop printing all these bills on paper and then throwing them away at the end of the day.
Well, you get the last word for right now. But when we come back, we're going to talk about a new mammal. We can listen to the roundtable.
A new mammal.
Support for WAMC comes from Richards Fuel and Heating, East Hampton, Massachusetts, providing high-efficiency gas and oil heating systems to the Pioneer Valley for over 45 years, now expanding into the Westfield area, richardsfuel.com. New York Renaissance Fair, Sterling Forest, Tuxedo, New York, celebrating their 36th anniversary of Elizabethan-inspired food, games, music, and performances, now through September 22nd, renfair.com. And Express Pediatrics, Highland, walk-in urgent care for children, 7 miles from New Paltz and open Monday through Friday, from 5 p.m. to midnight, weekends noon to midnight, expresspediatrics.com.
And we have an expression around here, tired, very tired.
Tired, very tired.
Before we get to this new mammal, which has got everybody aflutter and, you know, sort of begets the expression, aww, we're going to turn to one more serious story, gentlemen, and I mentioned it to you very briefly, so a reminder here. A letter signed by the chief judges of 87 federal courts warns budget cuts threaten the quality of the nation's judiciary system and public safety. The letter sent Thursday to Vice President Joe Biden in his role as President of the U.S. Senate. It cites a recent request by the New York Public Defender's Office to postpone the trial of Osama bin Laden's son-in-law because of staff cutbacks. But what about this issue? And it's not the first time, Alan, I know, especially in New York, we've heard from judges when they have issues.
Like their salaries.
Well, more than that, I think the criminal justice system is very underfunded, you know, in every aspect.
Public
of
defenders.
You know, public defenders, you know. There's trials that just stop at 4 o'clock in the afternoon because they have to close the courthouse because they don't want to pay the maintenance workers. This is in New York City. I mean, it's if you want quality justice, you have to pay for it.
But doesn't that always end up in a political argument when you start? Because you always get the other side, saying, you know, you just can't throw money at everything. You got to do it more efficiently.
Or are the judges working hard enough?
They would argue that
they're overworked.
They're overworked. Judges are being moved all around the state to pick up slack and try to clear the court calendars. And
you know, some do better than others, I would point out.
Right.
And every
Absolutely.
Once in a while you get some judge who really knows how to do it and gets an article written about them in the New York Times or another place and saying, you know, this is somebody who really knows how to do it. There are other people who think, you know, judgeship is so is a sinecure for life.
Well,
14 years in the case of New York.
Let me throw just a little bit more in to add a little more to this. But the judges say years of flat funding followed by March sequestration cuts have had a devastating impact on the courts. They say cuts in probation services have reduced the monitoring of criminal defendants to crisis levels. They say that in turn hinders crime deterrence, detection, and response and allows more drugs and illegal weapons into communities.
Well, that's sort of what Mike was talking about, but I think the question, Mike, is where you start.
I mean,
if you want a quality system,
right? Mm-hmm.
Then don't you have to start with what creates crime? In other words, do we have a one-stop center where everybody comes, where kids could be educated, where they can get health care?
Well, this harkens back to earlier in the week where Eric Holder spoke to the U.S.
Sure.
Bar Association
yeah, sure.
talking about needing alternatives to incarceration, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, this is a giant thread we're opening up here. But the actual court systems are underfunded from their perspective, and they are taking a premier case and delaying it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, of all the cases to choose, you know, they're taking it's like every politician wants to close the park, but you don't want to get rid of any bureaucrats that nobody sees. You know, so they are using the Osama bin Laden connection trial. His son-in-law is facing a trial in New York, and they. By not doing that, you know, justice is being delayed, and that's very high profile. So, you know, it does sound like the judges are playing politics maybe by doing that.
Well, and it's not only that, but you hear this in other agencies of government, like the Department of Environmental Conservation in New York, who's often over the years griped that they have a lot of things they're supposed to do, but they don't have enough inspectors on the ground to do it.
And then you're going to open up fracking sites and expect this bleeding agency.
Where's the oversight going to come from?
Yeah, or the bodies to even, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right.
That's absolutely. Well, speaking of bodies, gentlemen, introducing to you a new species of mammal, the Olenguito. Amid the misty treetops and giant tomato-sized figs in the Andean cloud forest, the researchers spotted the animal the very first night. It sort of bounced around the trees almost like a monkey, said zoologist Roland Kays, doing its thing, eating the figs. The small bushy-tailed, rust-colored furry mammal they named the Olenguito was a rare find, the first new carnivore species found in the Western Hemisphere in 35 years.
It's big news. Every zoo, every reputable zoo in the world is going to want to get their own Olenguito.
That's bad. Yeah. I mean, you know, zoos are under tremendous attack now because how would you like to be behind a bar? Mm. There was a story on NPR this very morning about a kid who heard a lion bark.
Yes.
And when the mother looked, it was a dog because they had taken the lion out to do something else. The dog was in the cage, big dog.
Well, I don't know if I don't know what this Olenguito does. I don't hear.
Sort of like a raccoon, they say, but more like a bear.
Small, though. It's small. Couple of pounds, right? I mean, it's pretty minuscule.
It says Olenguito is Spanish for little adorable olingo. And, of course, it's the Smithsonian Institute at a news conference to announce the discovery. And you can check out the journal Zoo Keys to read more about the Olenguito.
Right, but I would point out the word carnivore is of some interest to me.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, they eat a lot of fruits, according to this article. But, you know, I think there should be a movement. I'll bet there will be a movement to keep the Olenguito in the rainforest or in the elevated, forests of Andes, of the Andes Mountains, and not bring them everywhere.
Well, you know, even this country has a penchant, as you said, Mike, for helping zoos fill their quotas, doing things like pandas for China. Mm-hmm. And China exacts a huge price for those pandas.
Mm-hmm. They only lend them to us.
Yeah, they lend them to us for a lot of money, millions of dollars. Along comes a fairly economically oppressed society, and they say, "What are you talking about? We want to make some money here. Why can't we do this?"
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other controversial thing that goes on at zoos now, and I've heard stories about this on our air, is a live feeding. They invite families. Mothers, children, fathers
come in,
and they come in and they feed a tiger a live animal right there.
And apparently, taken with them,
the attendance is overwhelming. Mm-hmm. It's a big draw. And of course, in other countries, they do that regularly. But
don't they call it? Isn't that sort of like the fighting that the legislature wants to put in now?
Ultimate fighting.
The ultimate fighting.
I don't know where that came from.
Well, save your calls, save your letters.
They're both,
I don't know, but
vicious.
It's like, you know, swimming with the dolphins. You know, you can go in the Caribbean and pay a lot of money and you can
Like that if you're feeding a live animal in a zoo to another live animal.
Oh, live animal to I thought you were giving a milk bottle to a baby cub
or
something.
Oh, no. What are you saying? Didn't you say that?
No, it's a live animal.
It's a live animal.
Golly.
And so if you're doing that, what's the message to the child there?
Well, a lot of the children were confused and asked, and there were some interesting responses from the parents in the story I heard, but
make that kid tough. Let them know how harsh nature is.
Let's not put the Olenguito in there if we can avoid that for now.
No, save the Olenguito. Let's get bumper stickers.
Save the Olenguito. Imagine living 5,000 to 9,000 feet above, sea
level. David, I want to compliment you. You've done very well this morning, hasn't he, Michael?
You have great stamina.
Yeah. So what are you going to do for the next 3 minutes?
We've fooled them. We do have 3 more minutes. What are you guys doing this weekend?
Oh, yeah.
Doing? Some pretty good weather, huh?
We're looking at a good forecast for the weekend. It's going to be out. Alan is going to be in the garden, I predict.
Don't say that. My back guy might be here listening to this. You don't want to do that.
Well, I think I'm going to try to get out onto the Hudson River in a kayak. My wife and I want to kayak on the Hudson River, so we're going to go to Waterford and go in and go around Peebles Island and go across the
That's a good idea. idea.
Yeah. So nice. I highly recommend
Let's everybody join Mike.
We have a giant paddle.
Anybody wants to come to my house for a wiffle ball game, my nephews will be in town Saturday night for the big sleepover.
Well, that sounds like a
Yeah,
pretty...
you sound like you're very fascinated.
Anybody wants to come to my house, don't.
On that note, goodbye, people. We're deciding not to be nice for the last 2 minutes of this program. So
have a great weekend, everybody.
You too.
A few Ray Graff quotes. Off you go now. Try not to talk. Hey, it's been great. Mike Spain, associate editor of the Times Union. Alan Shartok. Get that pooch purse, will you, please? Have a great weekend. Don't come to any of our houses. We'll see you later. Goodbye.